Shri Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shri Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mathura Dham ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dham ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vishnu Vidale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nirvase Sisindavadi Paskachade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Panchakalpa Chubhishcha Kripa Sindhavya Vita Patitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavevya Namo Namah. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it's the 6th of June 2018. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, Texts 20 and 21. This is in the chapter Bali Maharaj surrenders the universe. So text 21 is on the board. I'll read text 20. The Gandharvas, the Kimpurushas, and the Kinnaras sounded thousands and thousands of kettle drums and trumpets again and again. That must have been very loud. And they sang in great jubilation, declaring, "How exalted a person is Bali Maharaj, and what a difficult task he has performed. Even though he knew that Lord Vishnu was on the side of his enemies, he nonetheless gave the Lord the entire three worlds in charity." So, of course, it's interesting that they say this. What's particularly interesting about what the demigods say here? On the side of the enemy, yes. So generally materialistic people think that God is their enemy, more or less. They think he's out to get them. What's the other interesting thing they say here? Thinking about how the story is going, the progression of the story, the plot. They're saying he gave what? Well, he said he gave the Lord how much? What? What did he say he gave the Lord? The three worlds. Why is that strange? At this point in the story.
Because Balanandara hadn't expanded himself. He's still small and he promised three steps.
Exactly. Well, the only thing that Bali Maharaj has given so far is three steps of land according to Vaman's measurement. Now, Sukracharya did say, if you give him that, he'll take the three worlds. But Bali didn't exactly give the three worlds, did he? Was that his intention, to give the three worlds? Not really. His intention was to give three little steps of land. So it's just interesting that all these demigods are praising him. You've given the three worlds. That's about to happen. Can you think of another place in the Bhagavatam where someone's praised for something they didn't yet do? Parikshit? Perhaps. I'm not sure what you're thinking of. What? Prithu Maharaj. So as soon as Prithu Maharaj appears, the brahmanas are praising him for all the things he will do. And he says, "Stop it. I haven't done them yet. Don't praise me for something I haven't done yet." So it's sort of interesting here that a similar thing is happening. They're praising him for something that hasn't quite yet happened. It's sort of happened, but not yet. So That's a little interesting. Okay, going on to text 21, which is on the board. Tadvamanam rupam avardhata Tadvamanam rupam avardhata bhutam. Harer anantasya guna trayatmakam. Bhukam disho dyur vivara payodayas. Tiram nirdeva rishayo yadashtata. Tat. That. Vamanam. Incarnation of Lord Vamana. Rupam. Form. Avardhata. Began to increase more and more. Adbhutam. Certainly very wonderful. Harehe. Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anantasya. Of the Unlimited. Gunatraya Atmakam, whose body is expanded by the material energy, consisting of three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Bhu, the land, Kam, the sky, Dishaha, all directions, Yao, the planetary systems, Vivaraha, different holes of the universe. I wonder what that is. Maybe that's what the scientists think the black holes are, the holes of the universe. Payodayaha, great seas and oceans. Tiryak, lower animals, birds, and beasts. Nri, human beings. Devaha, demigods. Rishayaha, great saintly persons. Yet, wherein Asita lived. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The unlimited, supreme personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of Vamana, then began increasing in size, acting in terms of the material energy, until everything in the universe was within his body, including the earth, the planetary systems, the sky, the directions, the various holes in the universe, the seas, the oceans, the birds, beasts, human beings, the demigods, and the great saintly persons. So what was in the Lord's body without looking? Huh? What was in the Lord's body without looking? He gets a Mahasui. Okay? That's holes. Universal holes. What else? The oceans. The beasts. Humans.
Lower animals.
The birds. The demigods. Demons, though they're not mentioned here, I'm sure they were there too. The sky, right? The directions, right? The rishis, the saints. So can we just think about that for a minute, what that would look like? That everybody's in the body of the Lord. That means we're in the body of the Lord too, just by the way. Purport. Bali Maharaja wanted to give charity to Vamanadeva, but the Lord expanded his body in such a way that he showed Bali Maharaja that everything in the universe is already in his body. It reminds me of when Krishna is arguing with Rukmini and he tells her that he's very poor. He says, I don't own anything. And she says, yeah, you don't own anything because you are everything. Going on. Actually, no one can give anything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he is full in everything. Sometimes we see a devotee offering Ganges water to the Ganges. After taking his bath in the Ganges, a devotee takes a palmful of water and offers it back to the Ganges. Actually, when one takes a palmful of water from the Ganges does not lose anything, And similarly, if a devotee offers a palm full of water to the Ganges does not increase in any way. But by such an offering, the devotee becomes celebrated as a devotee of Mother Ganges. Similarly, when we offer anything with devotion and faith, what we offer does not belong to us, nor does it enrich the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if one offers whatever he has in his possession, he becomes a recognized devotee. Isn't that interesting? We offer something that's not ours. It doesn't help the Lord. But, oh, what a great devotee you are. Going on, in this regard, the example is given that when one's face is decorated with a garland and sandalwood pulp, the reflection of one's face in a mirror automatically becomes beautiful. The original source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is our original source also. Therefore, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is decorated, the devotees and all the devotees are decorated automatically. Tadvamanam rupam avar dadad putam harer anantasya guna trayatmakam bhukam disho jyur vivara payo dayas triyam nirdeva rishayo tad asata. The unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of Vamana, then began increasing in size, acting in terms of the material energy, until everything in the universe was within his body, including the earth, the planetary systems, the sky, the directions, the various holes in the universe, the seas, the oceans, the birds, beasts, human beings, the demigods, and the great saintly persons. So here Bali is giving to the Lord, and Bali Maharaj exemplifies, we use him as an exemplar of two aspects of bhakti particularly. We use him as an exemplar of surrender, atmanivedanam, but that's not quite yet in the story. So that will be a little later that Bali exemplifies atmanivedanam, but at this particular point, he's an exemplar of an aspect of rasa. Does anybody know which aspect of rasa Bali Maharaj is exemplifying here? This is not an easy question.
Wonder.
Well, that would be correct, although that's not how he's listed. But yes, and we have in fact the word Adbhuta here in relationship to Vamandev. So certainly, Bali Maharaj must be experiencing the Adbhuta rasa here. This is a very difficult question. This is not at all an easy question. I'll be astonished if anybody knows the answer to this question. Well, there's some humility, I'm sure, because he thought that he owned the universe and he's finding out that he didn't.
Humor.
There may be some humor. It's very possible that there's some human going, somebody's laughing. I'm not sure if Bali's laughing, but I'm sure that somebody is definitely laughing here at the irony of this.
Ghastly rasa, perhaps,
although maybe looking at the universal holes, there's some ghastly rasa. This is very hard. It's in the nectar devotion, it's in the bhakti rasamrita sindhu, it's there. But it's easy to miss.
Okay. He's great, he's chivalry.
Good, good, wow! Another Mahasweet. We ought to have a plate of them here and give them out. It is. It's a subcategory of the chivalrous rasa. The chivalrous rasa has four subcategories. So, vira rasa has four subcategories. This is one of them. Which one? Which subcategory of the chivalrous rasa? Ta-da.
Tell us which are the four, we can try to guess.
It's called dana-vira. So there's a category of the chivalrous rasa where you give charity. So it's one of the four categories of the chivalrous rasa where you give charity. And Bali Maharaj exemplifies a subcategory of that. So that rasa has two subcategories. One of those subcategories has another two subcategories. And he's given as the example of that subcategory of the chivalrous rasa. And this particular subcategory is pretty astonishing. The mood of this category of rasa is something that it's a little different than we might feel at first. Because all over the world, in all religious systems, people offer things to the Lord. Correct? In every religion, even some of the non-religious religions, like parts of Buddhism, they're still offering incense and lamp, and that's pretty typical. So we might not understand the nature of this rasa. It's a very interesting rasa. Now, if you think about why it's a subcategory of chivalry. So in chivalry, in the fighting part of chivalry, you think of yourself as the Lord's what? Competitor. You think of the Lord's equal or competitor. In this particular subcategory, you think of yourself as the Lord's superior. Now, as we said, there's two main subcategories of the chivalrous rasa. One is where the Lord's trying to give to you and you refuse. So that's one is very renounced, and the Lord says, I'll give you opulences, I'll give you this, I'll give you that, and you say, no, I'm renounced, I don't want anything from you. So that's one subcategory. The other subcategory is you're giving. You're the giver. You're the benefactor. You're the donor. Do we find happiness by giving? Is that a kind of pleasure? Yes, very much so. And often the person who's giving has a little bit of a mood of superiority, isn't it? I'm great, and so I'm giving something to you. And this was, in fact, Bali Maharaj's mood. What did he say to Vamandev? Ask me for something so great that
you will not need to ask anything anymore.
You'll never need to ask anything more from anyone else. Of course, this statement is what got him. Because Vamandev's like, only I can say that, not you. But he was in a kind of ecstasy. So this is a kind of ecstasy that I have more than you. You're a little boy, right? And in fact, Rupa Goswami says the stimulant, the udipan, for this rasa, is finding a worthy person to give to. So worthy means, what does it a worthy recipient of charity mean?
One who's in need.
One who's in need. If someone doesn't need anything, why would you give them charity? You might give them a gift.
Or he deserves.
And they deserve. So they're in need and they're deserving. What does deserving mean? You have a certain status, okay. Other idea of deserving. You'll appreciate it. They'll use it in the right way. Yeah?
I'm not sure about enough karmic budget.
Enough karmic
budget?
Yeah. I like that. The karmic budget. Can I steal that? So somebody who's in need, they're lacking something, and they're of worthy character, they have integrity, and they're going to use it properly, they're not going to squander it on something. Yeah? So, and the giver is taking the position, again, of superiority, of examining. Are you worthy? Do you follow? I mean, if you think of it like, you know, a prospective employer who's examining, are you worthy to work here? Or the temple president, you know, are you worthy to live in the ashram? Do we want you here? Or the government, you know, are you worthy to get a visa? We're having a big meeting of the Shastric Advisory Council in a few days in Italy, and two of our members were not granted visas by the Italian government. And then one of them tried with the Slovenian government, wasn't able to get a visa either. And they didn't even give a reason. They just said denied. No reason. So, which is I'm like, not going to do this in Europe again. It's really not very pleasant. So this is the position of a superior. I can decide whether or not to let you in. I can decide whether or not to give to you. I remember the first time I went to Ireland. He just went back on the altar. So the first time I went to Ireland, when I got there, they're asking me, you know, who do you want to visit? And when I told them, they said, that's not a very Irish name. Hare Krishna. Anyway, then I said, would you, as I always say, I said, I travel a lot. Would you stamp my passport in the corner, please, so it doesn't take up so much room? They said, I don't even know if I'm going to let you in. Don't assume I'm going to. I was like, whoops. And the Irish stamp takes up half a page. I don't know. It's a little country, but they take up half a page. So they have this mood, you know, it's up to us if we let you in or not. If we give this to you, you're taking this view of examining the person in superiority to the person. And that is the stimulus for this rasa. Imagine that. That stimulates this feeling of love. So who has a system of religion like this? Are you good enough to give to? Do you need anything? With God. This is not the way that in most religions people offer things to the Lord, is it? When people go to Tirupati and they're putting all the money in the big bag for Balaji, they're not thinking, maybe some of them are in this Vira Rasa, but most people, I'm sure, are not thinking, are you good enough, Balaji? Do you really need anything? You know, but this is what stimulates it. Just exactly like materially, what stimulates us to give charity? The same kind of thing, isn't it? When our god brother Agnidev Prabhu got really sick in Australia recently, and Indrajumna Swami was doing a campaign, I think he raised like $140,000 for his medical care. So what are we thinking? He needs it and he deserves it. He's worthy. He's a worthy person. And there's a genuine need. And that stimulates our desire, and we go to our bank account and we give something. Correct? And it stimulates a feeling. We get a certain pleasure from that. I have helped. So just remember the last time you gave something to somebody like that. I have helped. I've given some charity. And it's satisfying. I've done something good. Could you have that feeling with the Lord? I think for most of us that would feel a little odd. For me that feels a little odd. I don't think that's my rasa, because I just feel like, huh? How could I feel that way about the Lord? But that is the stimulus. Now, the Sanskrit for the sthaibhav, sthai means to stay. It's related to the English word stable or stay. The sthaibhav is described as dhanotsava. Everybody know what utsaha means?
Festival.
A festival. So it's a festival of giving, of charity. It's an excitement. So that's the basic feeling. You know, in the other rasas, we generally call them as rasas, but really rasa has to have five components. Everybody knows this? For rasa to be there, there has to be the basic sthai, the stable thing, which might be friendship or chivalry or something like that. Then there's what stimulates it, what you do intentionally, what you do spontaneously, the different waves of emotion that go through you. So all those five things have to be there in order for something to be a rasa. So the stable thing is just this happiness of giving. And again, I think materially we can all relate to this, the happiness of giving to a worthy person in need. The stimulant is that they're a worthy person in need. What are the actions? So Rupa Goswami describes the actions are giving more than what was asked. Giving more than what was asked. I'm thinking, I just did this with my granddaughter. My granddaughter manages my websites, and I pay her for it. It's what she does for a livelihood. She doesn't charge me very much, but I give her something for it. So recently she designed the poster for my new book. And she had told me how many hours she spent on it. And then I said, so, you know, what donation should I give you for this? And she quoted a very low price. And I thought, that's not commensurate with how many hours that she spent. So I gave her more than what she asked for. And she's like, oh, thank you, Grandma. And I felt a festival of giving. Yeah? Yes? Right? So this is one of the actions, giving more than what is asked. Another one is talking with a slight smile. Another one is steadiness. Another is kindness. And another is patience. So these are the actions, called in Sanskrit the anubhavs, the deliberate actions that one in this ecstasy engages in. Then all of the spontaneous behaviors called the sattvika bhavs are present in this rasa. Things like crying, being stunned, shivering, hair standing on end. All eight of those manifestations of ecstasy are possible with this particular rasa. And then the waves of emotion, the vibhavs. So one of them is eagerness. I want to give, I want to give. How can I help you? How can I help you? Another is delight. Just a feeling of total delight. And another one which I thought was very interesting is deliberate thought. And this vibhav of deliberate thought also has a corresponding mudra, which is this. You've seen this mudra? This is the mudra for deliberate thought. So can you understand why there'd be an emotion of deliberate thought in this rasa? Why do you think there'd be waves of deliberate thought in the vira, in this vira rasa of dana? Yes?
He was not listening to his spiritual
master. Okay, he wasn't listening to his spiritual master. Jaya Shishi Gopinath Varnitai Jagannath Param Subhanam. That required a lot of deliberate thought, didn't it? Why else? But in general in this rasa, why do you think there would be deliberate thought? You have to make a decision. What do you have to think about?
Is he worthy or not?
Is he worthy or not? Right. Is the recipient of my charity worthy or not? What else would you have to think about?
How much to give.
How much to give. Maybe what to give. Right? What should I give? So there's going to be some... How much do I have? Of course, Bali thought he had everything. So this rasa involves, this is a wave of emotion that goes through the pure devotee in this mood. Deliberate thought, delight, and eagerness. All right, now we come to the two subcategories of this subcategory, of this subcategory of the chivalrous rasa. So we have, I should have a diagram for this. We have the chivalrous rasa, then we have the four subcategories. One of them is this dhanavirya. The charity. Under there, there's another two subcategories of the renouncer who doesn't take what Krishna's giving and the giver. Then under the giver, there's another two subcategories. One is someone who doesn't give directly to Krishna. They give to the devotees, they give to the brahmanas to please Krishna. They're not giving so they'll go to heaven and, you know, they're giving just to please Krishna. So the example of this is Nanda Maharaj, who gave to the brahmanas on Krishna's birth. So my guess is that most of us have experienced a little abhasa of this rasa as members of the Hare Krishna movement. Haven't we? When we've given to devotees in order to make Krishna happy? It's some festival, it's some occasion, and I want to make Krishna happy, so I give something to the devotee. So that's a little, at least a little shadow of this rasa. And we have deliberate thought and we feel delight and we feel eagerness. Isn't it? Yes? Okay. Now, finally, we're at the sub category which Bali Maharaj exemplifies. And that is giving directly to Krishna. Seeing Krishna as the object of charity. Oh, no, not quite yet, because we have yet another subcategory. Even seeing Krishna as the object of charity, one can be giving out of affection or out of worship. The example of who gave out of affection was Maharaj Yudhisthira. At the Rajasuya Yajna, he was giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and giving and giving, and then he had nothing more to give and he was sad. So Yudhisthira is much more, his main saibhav is much more friendship. So he's giving to Krishna like you give to your friend, or like give more to an equal. With Bali, he was giving to Krishna more in this puja dhan, as a form of worships. So one who's giving to Krishna, it says he realizes the real nature of possessions, which are sources of material identity and possessiveness, and wants to surrender them to the Lord. So this was the mood in which Bali Maharaj gave everything. Now, Rupa Goswami says, and Prabhupada also talks about in the Nectar Devotion, that the Lord accepted this offering of Bali Maharaj with his hand. We were reading yesterday how Bali was offering water to the Lord, washing the Lord's feet, taking it on his head, but he also basically, symbolically, put these three steps of land in his hand. Generally, when you give charity, you give it in someone's hand. And does anyone know what's on the Lord's hands? This is a little...
auspicious marks.
Yes, very auspicious marks. But they're there all the time. There's something else which must not be there all the time, because Krishna takes lots of baths and swims a lot. So it must come off and have to come back on again. But there's something there. This is mentioned in the Nectar Devotion. And what?
Kumkum.
Yes. There's kumkum on the Lord's hand from touching the breast of the goddess of fortune, which Prabhupada says indicates that the goddess of fortune is under the control of the Lord for his own enjoyment. That's symbolic of the fact that the Lord already owns everything, as mentioned here in today's purport. On his hands is this powder, which is indicative that the goddess of fortune belongs to him, is his consort. And yet, he holds out these hands covered with kumkum from the breast of the goddess of fortune to receive what apparently might have been a very paltry offering from Bali Maharaj. So this is the blessings of the Lord. And therefore, when one gives to the Lord, one gets far more than one is giving, isn't it? Which is Prabhupada's point here in this purport. You don't really, how can you give something to the person who has the kumkum from the goddess of fortune on his hands? There's nothing you can give such a person. Thinking that such a person is a worthy object of charity is simply a kind of ecstasy. Oh, he needs something. He's a poor little boy. He's come here begging something. But who benefits is the giver. Now, such is true when we give to the devotees to please Krishna also. I had a funny situation like this in New Zealand many, many years ago. Jayapataka Swami came there. He had two assistants. One was making a film. And he said from the Vyasasan, which he said, the New Zealand temple doesn't pay airfare. I'm like, yeah, I know about that. He said, so anybody who'd like to help donate for my airfare, you know, I'd really appreciate it, especially I brought two assistants, and I thought, okay, well, I know what's that like. You know, so I thought, okay, what could I give? So I gave him $50 towards his airfare. And the next day, a devotee gave me $500. And I thought, well, that's an interesting investment strategy. You know, of course, I didn't intend that. It wasn't that I was thinking that that kind of thing would happen, but I thought it was quite fascinating. And Prabhupada talks about this, that if you just give in charity, you get it back next life. If you give to someone who's worthy, you get it back so many times. And, you know, if you give to a perfectly realized Mahabhagavat, you get it back unlimited times. In fact, how much wealth we have in this life is almost entirely due to how charitable we have been in past lives and in this life. The ordinary parent with their children, you're going to give more to a child who will share with their brothers and sisters than to a child who keeps it all for themselves. Isn't that a fact? Right? We give the big pot of prasadam to someone who serves it out to all the devotees. We don't give the big pot of prasadam to somebody who takes out all the paneer for themselves and then serves it out. I used to be in charge of the serving at Janmashtami in North Carolina, and my rule was all the servers had to make a plate for themselves first. Otherwise, I found they'd be stingy with the preps that didn't have a lot of quantity. You know. So Krishna gives wealth to those who have been charitable. And the charity, of course, that we give to the devotees comes back in the form of the pleasure of the Lord and in bhakti, not just in money. And when we give to Krishna, we give to Krishna everything. Let's say we give to Krishna everything. Then Krishna also matches us, and he gives us everything. So who gets more? If I give Krishna everything I have, and Krishna gives me everything that he has, who gets more? And what do I have? Everything I have is Krishna's. If you're not sure about that, just remember how easily he can take anything away. And he can take it away like that, without notice even. Without notice. He doesn't even have to give, you know, like a landlord legally has to give you an eviction notice, but Krishna doesn't. Just say, out of your body, now. Home on fire, now, whatever. I was speaking like this once in Puerto Rico at the Sunday feast, and when I went back to my room, I realized I'd forgotten to lock my door. And my only possession, which was $100, had been stolen. So I thought, okay, that's pretty funny. So it's like that. You know, everything belongs to the Lord. What do I have to give? But really all I have to give is my free will. That's all. It's the only thing that's mine. Krishna says one should know what is his and what is not his. So all I can give is my free will and say, my Lord, I surrender, which we are getting to later in the story about Bali Maharaj exemplifying, at which point Krishna gives everything. So there's so many wonderful varieties of ways to love and serve the Lord. There's actually as many varieties as there are jivas. We've talked about this is one of the 12 rasas, and then the subcategory and the sub and the sub-sub-subcategory is Bali Maharaj. But really there are so many, an infinite number of jivas who are in this category of ecstasy, and each of them has their own unique flavor. And one of the many wonderful and special things about our Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy, which we really do not find in the rest of the world, frankly, even in the Vaishnava Sampradayas that only see the Lord as Vishnu, is this intricate variety of rasa. There's as many ways to love the Lord as there are jivas. So will we accept this ecstasy of giving to the Lord? What are we holding on to? Some paltry thing that we're holding on to when we could be diving in this ocean, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of the ecstasies of love of God, and at least appreciating all these varieties. This may not be our particular ecstasy, but at least appreciating this variety of ecstasy. And what's happening here on a deeper level, you know, on a superficial level, he's been cursed by his guru, and this little boy's getting really big, and all the holes in the universe are inside his body, and all the birds and the beasts and the planetary systems, and it's like, whoa, you know. But on a deeper internal level, Bali Maharaj is having these waves of ecstatic emotion. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements.
Donations?
Huh? Donations. That wasn't my intention. That was not my intention. Yes, Guru.
So what if, for example, a devotee doesn't have much? Yes. $100, and
if you don't give it, Krishna will have someone go to your room while you're giving the Sunday feast and steal it, right?
Yeah, that can happen. And what if he has just that, you know, he's a poor devotee, and he says, maybe, okay, I don't have much now, I'll keep it for myself to use it for my personal needs. rather than or the other example, I have nothing, I have so little, but still I will always give to Krishna, I will always give, because I know that He will always reciprocate my.
Oh my, what a question. Okay. When Hari Sari was Prabhupada's personal servant, there was a time, one or two times, he bought himself a dhoti and Prabhupada paid him back for it. He said, "What money are you using?" He said, "You're not earning any money." He was a brahmachari. And he said, "You have to have some money for savings. You have to have something set aside for emergencies." I mean, my mother always told me that, at least according to Jewish law, you shouldn't give so much in charity that you become an object of charity. Who was that devotee in Chaitanya Lila who couldn't manage his money properly? Who was that? Vasudev Datta? Is that who it was? And Lord Chaitanya asked Shivananda Sen to manage, am I getting the names right? Mahaprabhu asked Shivananda Sen to manage his... he was another case. Srivas was another case. He was always giving everything away, and his family wasn't eating. Yeah, and Mahaprabhu said, how are you feeding your family? You don't work. And he said, I have the 1-2-3 policy. What's this 1-2-3 policy? He says, after 3 days of no food, I'm going to drown in the Ganga. Mahaprabhu said, the Lakshmi may go begging, but you'll always have. But no, there was another, I think it was Vasudev Datta. Anyway, there was some devotee who was so liberal, he was always giving everything away. And Mahaprabhu asked another devotee, you better take care of his finances. He doesn't know how to manage his money. So Mahaprabhu wasn't so happy with this just giving everything away, especially if you're a householder. Especially if you're a householder, you're supposed to have 25% for emergencies. That's supposed to be there. Prabhupada talked about how the householders... that when the girl got married, the dowry was supposed to be in things like jewelry and costly saris that had gold in the saris. I mean, some saris now, I don't see anyone wearing anything like that. It may look like gold, but it may not be. But traditionally, it was real 24-karat gold. And so Prabhupada said if it was a time of need, you could burn the sari and sell the gold. And he said the utensils... you know, were made out of precious metals. Like they called it silverware because it used to be silver. It used to be sterling silver. It used to be solid silver. So your spoons, forks, and knives, your... You know, I remember when my mother, when she moved into a nursing home, she was giving away all of her silver. You know, she had a lot of... I took some of it to use for my worship, my puja. But, you know, people used to have things like that. Or I know one devotee couple... who has very good furniture. Like they told me, you know, our wealth is in furniture. It's all solid wood and antique. And in the meantime, you use it. You know, you're using the spoons, you're using the saris or jewelry. You know, not just a piece of glass, but people would have, you know, real jewels. Real gold, real jewels. And this was supposed to be given to the girl at the wedding by the father and mother. And it was supposed to be the girl's inheritance given at that time. Actually, Prabhupada also says that although this was used in the marriage, if there was some problem in the marriage, that it belonged to the woman. You know, nowadays you have this problem in India that the men think the dowry is for them. And if they don't get enough, they may even kill the wife. But traditionally, the dowry was, it belonged to the woman, and she could give it to her daughters as an inheritance. And it was hers in case there was a problem. You know, if the husband became whatever, if he went crazy or... if he died and the in-laws wouldn't take care of her. She had something that was hers. So this concept of having something in savings for an emergency is there, especially for the householders. Now, there are some exceptions. The Brahmana householders who live by charity are supposed to give away at the end of the day anything they haven't used that day. And sometimes those rules are also there for those in the renounced order. Now, the brahmacharis, the actual... brahmachari means living in a brahmachari ashram where your guru takes care of you like he was your father. And you only eat when your name is called to eat. And everything you get, you give to the guru. You only have personal possessions as the guru gives you. So Someone in the brahmachari ashram, brahmachari can mean a celibate, which could mean a vanaprastha or sannyasi, could be a brahmachari in that sense. But a brahmachari living in a brahmachari ashram generally does not have any possessions and is depending on the guru for maintaining them. And the sannyasis and the vanaprastas are generally are supposed to give away everything at the end of the day. Now, if you're collecting money not for your maintenance but for some project, just like hopefully by Krishna's grace in January we're going to start collecting for a Sunday school curriculum. So we've gotten the full blessings of the Ministry of Education and the Congregation Ministry and hopefully the ISKCON Communications. So as soon as we get a prototype, so we have to collect money for that. You understand? And if I think, well, okay, I've collected $2,000, but now it's already 7 o'clock at night and I haven't given it to the artist yet or the printer, so I'll give it away. So that would be really stupid. You follow? You know, if you're collecting for some project for Krishna, you have to accumulate it. And I even had a situation many years ago where there was one leader in ISKCON who gave a tremendous amount of money to education in 1 year. And I was given some of that for curriculum development. But his policy was, I'm going to give you so much every month, and if you haven't spent it by the end of that month, you'll get a reduced amount the next month. And that was terrible management, because you didn't have exactly the same amount of expenses each month. You know? Sometimes the artists do a lot, sometimes they don't do anything. It didn't work like that. And so it actually pushed us to spend money irresponsibly. It was a very bad system. So if you have money for some service purposes, no, you're not supposed to turn around and give it away for something else. And especially if someone gave it to you for something in particular. You know, if someone gave you money for a particular project, it's your duty to keep it and spend it for that project and not just say, oh, here, I'll give it away. And if somebody gave you money for your health, I mean, of course, Jayananda turned around and gave all the money for his health to Prabhupada to publish Nectar Devotion. He was given $5,000 for medical treatment, and he thought, I'm going to die anyway. Why spend it on my medical treatment? Let me give it to Prabhupada for his book. Now, if you know, then it becomes a personal choice. But just make sure if you have money for your maintenance and you give it away, that you don't give it away in the mode of passion. So the mode of passion is you regret afterwards. And I saw this happen with one devotee. She gave all of her inheritance to Srila Prabhupada to buy a temple. For years, she wasn't married at the time. The main person who lamented about that was her husband. So later on she got married and he lamented over and over and over and over again, why did my wife give all the inheritance? He's a devotee. Why did my wife give all that inheritance? I should have gotten some of it. And he would go to the temple and demand all kinds of things from the temple. My wife gave all of her inheritance to the temple, so I should get this and I should get that. If you're going to give like that, better don't give. I mean, be honest. Don't give in the mode of passion. Mode of passion is you give a superior, obligates you. You have to give, Prabhu. You don't really want to. You give against your heart, and later you regret. That's not only just true with money, it's true with time and energy. People who, you know, left their education, left their career, left their family, spent 15 years in the ashram, and then left. Why did I give my youth to the Hare Krishna movement? So don't do that. If you're going to lament and be bitter, then better to keep it. So you have to look, you know, at your... Be honest. Honest, you know, the devotees are called satam, the honest, the truthful people. So look in your heart and see, you know, how do I actually feel? If I give this away or some of this away, will I be in anxiety? Then keep it. You follow? If I can give it away, if I can give all of it away peacefully, then you can do that. You know, maybe give part of it away. That's you can look at. There's a rule. There's a rule. We should live like this. We should give charity like this. But you also, part of the rule is to give in the mode of goodness or in bhakti. That's part of the rule. And if you see that your mood is in passion or ignorance, then first try to elevate your mood. You know, try to elevate what modes of nature that you're in. So you can actually give in goodness or in transcendence. That's a very long answer, but it was, I thought it was a question that really required a long answer. In fact, we could have a whole week-long seminar on this, couldn't we? Yes.
I think you've been saying that if we give charity to Krishna, he will reciprocate way more than we get.
He does.
And isn't it like sometimes he's reciprocating in a way that sometimes he's just giving nothing to test us or making us more humble? And yeah, just we get something and then we get nothing back to show us.
Oh, that. It's not nothing. Then you're getting humility.
Yeah.
Which sounds, oh, I didn't really want that. But it's very sweet. Without humility, there's no love. You can't have love if you're arrogant. It doesn't work. So he's always giving back, and he's always giving back far, far, far more than we give, unlimited more than we give.
So sometimes he's just giving much to humility.
Could be. But that's what we came for.
Yeah.
Didn't we come to get rid of our false ego? Wasn't that the idea? Maybe not on day one, that wasn't what we came for. Maybe on day one we just came for the Sandesh or something, but you know. At a certain point, we definitely said, hey, I want to get rid of this false ego. Didn't we all say that at some point? So if he's giving that, that's what we want. And it may hurt a little, but it's like, you know, if you go to a doctor and say, get rid of this tumor, there may be some pain involved with that. Yeah? But they're giving you what you want. So giving detachment, giving humility, giving tolerance, giving patience, they may seem like, well, I really didn't want those things. Can you give me something else? A big castle by the sea with 1,000 servants? But perhaps giving us those things wouldn't give us what we really wanted, and we'd get them and we'd go, yuck, what kind of a gift is that? You understand? There's so many fairy tales in every culture about some magical being who gives wishes. You remember these from your childhood? You have 3 wishes, and usually the 3rd wish is get rid of the things you gave me in the first 2. You remember those stories when you were a kid?
Or give me unlimited wishes.
They never do that. You can never do a workaround. So, you know, usually the things they ask for in the first 2 wishes, by the 3rd wish, it's like, take them away! So Krishna, it says, doesn't like to give his devotees things that they have to unask. So Krishna gives the devotees things for which they will say, oh, this was a great gift. Although perhaps at that particular moment of giving, you might go, that wasn't really what I had in mind. You understand? But no, he always gives much, 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 much more than we give. And he takes our very paltry gifts as extremely significant. You know, Sudama's low-grade, 1 piece of chipped rice. And he took that as very significant. You know, patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayatati tadaham bhakti paritam ashnami parityatmana. So, if we can see, like the cups on the altar, you know, I see some cups there by the shilas. They're pretty small. They're only like this big, right? I like to talk about how I visited one devotee's house where their deities were very small and their cups were about this big. You could put a milliliter of water, like one little drop. You know. Try to make anybody happy by giving them that much water. But Krishna's happy. A little piece of fruit, a tulsi leaf. And he gives himself, you know, the fruit vendor who she gave the whole. A basket of fruit? What is a basket of fruit? And he gave her jewel and prema. So I think it's time to end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bali Maharaj ki jai.